You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast at savage.love.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
So, gay guys, if a queer-coded sea witch, half-octopus, half-drag queen, swims up to the stool next to you at the in-pool bar at the resort where you're staying in Puerto Vallarta this weekend and promises you trillions of insatiable sex partners and the ability to go all night every night, and all you have to do is sign the contract she's waving under your nose, read the fine print first. Don't be one of those poor, unfortunate holes who fails to read the fine print.
Poor, unfortunate souls in pain, in need.
This one longing to be thinner, that one wants to get the girl, and do I help them?
Yes, indeed.
Those poor, unfortunate souls, so sad.
Because the thing about those sea witches, especially the queer-coded ones, they're tricky. But knowing how gay men are, yeah, some of you would sign that contract without reading the fine print first. I mean, I have been to Darklands, I have been to Lab, I have seen gay men stand in line for 5 hours in the rain to get into a warehouse packed with a mere 500 potential sex partners. So here's the fine print on that particular contract that particular sea witch in Puerto Vallarta is waving under your nose. If you sign, you will have trillions of sex partners, but you will be a bug. You'll be one of the trillions of cicadas that emerge from the ground once every 13 to 17 years, depending on which brood you're in. Think of a cicada brood like a drag house. And I'm sorry, but you don't get to emerge on Fire Island or Fugerstrasse. You emerge in downstate Illinois. Here's the headline at LGBTQ plus news and culture website them.us that went viral last week. Sexually transmitted fungus is making trillions of cicadas hypersexual and gay. My first thought reading that headline on Abby Montiel's report was, sounds like an excellent premise for season 2 of HBO's The Last of Us. I couldn't get into season 1, but if Massospora cicadina is featured in season 2, if they make season 2 of The Last of Us all about this hypersexual gay fungus somehow making the leap from cicadas to humans, I may give the show another chance. My second thought, after actually clicking through and reading the piece, them.us is a very queer, very PC publication, the kind of news website that regularly schools/scolds its readers on niche sexual orientations, correct neo-pronoun usage, new microaggressions that just dropped. So I was surprised when I clicked through and discovered that the headline on this story was something of a microaggression itself. Now, journalists don't write their own headlines, but Abby Montiel committed the same microaggression in her lead. This fungus, Montiel writes, is a sexually transmitted pathogen that makes male cicadas hypersexual and gay. Except it doesn't make those bugs gay, as those of us who kept reading past the headline, past the lead, learned. Matthew Kaysen, a professor of mycology and forest pathology at West Virginia University, told CBS that when infected, a cicada's genitals will fall off as the fungus erupts and covers roughly a third of their body. At the same time, the fungus produces an amphetamine that makes male cicadas super horny for their fellow bugs, regardless of sex. Quote, males will continue to try and mate with females unsuccessfully because, again, their back end is a fungus. They have no genitals. Montiel quotes Kaysen as saying, but they'll also pretend to be females to get males to mate with them, too. All right, I'm sorry to report that what we have here at them.us is a headline that may, like so many of my intros, lean into stereotypes about gay men. Only gay men can be hypersexual. Not true. But also a headline and a lead that commits the sin of bi erasure, which is never okay, except when it is. John Wayne Gacy, the man who tortured and murdered 33 young men and boys in Chicago in the 1970s, he identified as bisexual. Gacy was married to a woman. He had two kids. But I've never heard a single bisexual person rise to object when Gacy is invariably described, as he always is, as a gay serial killer. But like John Wayne Gacy, the trillions of hypersexual bugs flying around downstate Illinois this spring, not gay. Hypersexual, yes, but not gay. Bi. So, just like bisexual humans make up the largest segment of the Homo sapien LGBTQ plus community, bisexual cicadas make up the largest segment of the fungus-infected hypersexual Nola cicada community too. And it is wrong to erase them like this. Do better, them. Do better. All right, coming up on today's show on The Micro, tons of your Q, lots of my A, and professional dominatrix Ms. Kim Lee joins me for the second installment of What Are You Doing? Then on The Magnum, TV writer Neil McNeil comes on the show to talk about a recent piece he wrote for Medium about becoming a third, about dating a couple. And Neil sticks around to give a little sex advice to a caller thinking about doing the same. And a quick note for Savage Lovecast Magnum subscribers, you are invited to Savage Love Live, our special monthly Zoom hangout for Magnum subs, this Thursday, noon Pacific. Look for the link Thursday morning. We'll be sending it all out to you by email, and we will see you at Savage Love Live. If you're not a Magnum sub, but you want to check out Savage Love Live, you can become a Magnum sub right now at savage.love. All right, if you are a sub, show starts now. If you're not yet a sub, show starts after these ads. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Dipsy. Dipsy is an app full of hundreds of short, sexy audio stories designed by women for women. Get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/savage. Today's episode is brought to you by Shameless Care, offering STI prevention medication online. For a year's supply of DoxyPep for just $109, head over to www.shamelesscare.com/savage. That's www.shamelesscare.com/savage. This episode is brought to you by Helix Sleep, the best mattress for your individualized comfort. Right now, my listeners get 20% off all mattress orders and two free pillows. Go to helixsleep.com/savage.
Hello, Dan, Nancy, and the tech-savvy at-risk youth. I am a 28-year-old woman from the west coast of Canada, and I have a question about consent. I am a sexual health educator, and I sometimes get gifted sex toys, which is dreamy, but I recently got gifted a toy that is a vibrator. It's like an internal insertable vibrator that a partner or someone is supposed to like turn on or off or turn up. And the person who gifted it to me was saying, oh, this is like super fun when you're out for a hot date at a restaurant, or when you're out in public, you can use it. And my first reaction was like, okay, cool, that sounds fun. But then I started to think about it and I'm feeling weird about it. I know people do this to like have spicy date nights and things like that. However, I have some concerns and some feelings about consent. Because yeah, obviously I'd be consenting, my partner or the other person would be consenting. However, the server wouldn't be consenting, or people like in the restaurant or in the bar wouldn't be consenting. And even if we are in maybe a really loud bar or loud place, the vibrator is quite loud. I'm sure they make ones that are quieter, but it's quite loud. And I'm sure, I don't know, people could probably tell that someone is using this toy. And I mean, they didn't consent to be part of that situation. Part of me feels like, am I just being a prude? I don't know. But I do have some consent concerns about it, about putting other people in like uncomfy situations.
If you want to be scrupulous about consent, obviously you should tell the waiter, ask the waiter's consent for you to use the vibrator while he takes your order. And you should go to nearby tables, other diners who might overhear the vibrator, and ask for their consent. That won't make anybody uncomfortable. No, that would make people even more uncomfortable. What you want to do is give yourself permission to do what so many people are out there moving through the world doing every day, which is deriving secret thrills from the secret perving that they're doing. Think of the businessman who goes to the business meeting for a high-stakes businessman deal of business things wearing panties and a garter belt underneath his suit, and nobody knows. And part of the thrill for him is that there's all these men in the room, and maybe one or two high-powered corporate women too, who have no idea that he's wearing women's underwear. And that's part of the thrill for him. And it involves other people in a peripheral way without them being made aware of their involvement. And I'm sorry, that's allowed, unless we're going to strip search everybody going into every restaurant and bar and into every business meeting everywhere forever to make sure that nobody's wearing undergarments that are presumed to be not appropriate for their gender identity or expression, or has a remote controlled butt plug or vibrator tucked into their pussy. We can't control for it. And controlling for it would involve greater violations of consent and people's bodily autonomy. You are allowed to secretly perv, so long as you're capable of keeping it a delicious secret. If the remote controlled vibrator you got is so loud that you're worried other people will hear it, get a quieter one. And there are quieter ones. And you are fine. You are fine. The waiter has no idea. But we all kind of know that sometimes there are people, and sometimes we are those people, who are out in public getting our flirt on or getting our very secret perv on. And it is just our kind of unavoidable presence that gives it an added thrill. And what can you do about that? You can't do anything about that. We all kind of sign up for that when we leave the house. There are people who go out in full fetish gear and then throw something else on over it and go to IKEA. And it turns them on to know that underneath their clothes, and they appear to be normies, they're actual pervies. And the presence of other people is part of what gives it its frisson, veroticism. And yeah, that's allowed. It's not secret perving if the remote-controlled vibrator is so fucking loud that everybody knows. It's not secret perving if you have a visible erection. It's not secret perving if you're panting and flushed and unable to mask the arousal that you're experiencing by moving through the world. Then you're telling on yourself, and it's not secret perving anymore. It's just perving that other people are going to perceive, and then they are involved. They're brought in, and that's not fair. That could be a violation of their consent that you need to concern yourself with. But the waiter or the people at the next table or the people sitting next to you at the bar not knowing that you have a remote control butt plug in or that you're wearing a cock cage or that underneath your suit you have a bra and panties on, all of that is allowed.
Hi, Dan. I am a 28-year-old bisexual cis woman. In the past year, I have been introduced to butt play for myself, and I've discovered that I really like butt plugs and things inside of my butt. As a result of that, I've also been introduced to butthole cleaning practices and been introduced to what is inside of my butthole. The problem is that I have OCD and I'm kind of a germaphobe. So even though I'm only having other people or objects for butt play inside of my butt maybe once a month or twice a month, I have begun to clean the inside of my butthole every single time I go to the bathroom. And I'm worried that I'm causing some damage, but I kind of can't stop doing it. And now that I know what is inside of my butthole, I feel tempted to go in there and clean like far up in my butthole every time I go to the bathroom. So my question is, once a person discovers what's inside of their butthole, how do they not want to clean in there? And should I stop trying to do that?
There's always going to be poop in your butt. There's nothing you, well, there actually is something that you can do about that, but it's always and forever just going to be a temporary fix. You can douche every time you go to the bathroom, every time you have a bowel movement for the rest of your life, but there's just going to be more poop coming down that pike that's a little further up. And yeah, if you suffer from OCD, if you have intrusive thoughts about the fact that your gastrointestinal tract is working as it oughta, consider booking a few sessions with a therapist who specializes in cognitive behavioral therapy who can help you conquer those intrusive thoughts. But you're going to want to stop douching daily, not just daily, literally every time you go to the bathroom, which I assume is more than once a day. You don't want to douche that often. There's a risk that you could unlearn the ability to have regular bowel movements. Sometimes people who douche all the time wind up having to douche every time. they need to have a bowel movement. You don't want to put yourself in that position. So take fiber supplements, have firm, regular bowel movements, and reassure yourself that your butthole is not a chocolate frozen yogurt dispenser in the back of a Tasty Freeze in a small town in Texas during a heat wave and a brownout. It's not a shit show in there. It's not constantly dripping chocolate frozen yogurt. It's just your butt. And sometimes there's poop a little further up in your rectum that didn't come out during that bowel movement. But a lot of time there's nothing near the end run of your gastrointestinal tract that needs to come out, or that you should dislodge too soon, or come out, bring it out before it's time. So just, you know, you need to knock this off. That's why you called. Knock it off. If you're having a hard time knocking it off because you're tortured by the mental images of what might still be in your butt or what the inside of your butt looks like, I don't know what to tell you, but to suspend your disbelief as everybody else does. People don't walk around thinking, oh my God, the inside of my asshole is a shit show. Yeah, of course it's a shit show. It's the inside of your asshole. It's supposed to be a shit show. Sometimes you want it to be an amusement park and you clean up the poop and get it out of the way. If you douche, if you need to douche. But the rest of the time, you just kind of don't think about it or think that this is how it works and what it is usually for. And if for no other reason, then you don't want to become one of those people who has to douche every time you take a bowel movement, not after you take a bowel movement, but every time you need to take a bowel movement. You don't want to wind up with a terrible fecal impaction. You will stop this. And if you're having trouble stopping it on your own because you have OCD, go see that therapist who specializes in cognitive behavioral therapy who can help you conquer those intrusive thoughts about what is happening inside your butt when you're not playing with it.
There's been some talk on the show lately about fantasy novels, which brings me to Dipsy. Just finished A Court of Thrones and Roses and craving another fantasy world to devour? Dipsy's got you. Dive into spicy enemies to lovers tales, or embark on an epic romance between immortal fae and sworn foes. They've got fantasy romance stories perfect for your morning walk, late night, or long bath. Dipsy is an app full of hundreds of short, spicy audio stories. They bring scenarios to life with immersive soundscapes and realistic characters. Discover stories about second chance romances, adventurous vacation flings, and hot and heavy hookups. And they're listening to you. There's a growing library of fantasy series with werewolves, Greek gods and goddesses, Regency-era historical fiction, and fairy smut to explore the bounds of your pleasure. New content is released every week, so in between listening to your favorite stories again and again, you can always find something new to explore. Dipsy offers a modern approach to romance through high-quality and captivating audio fiction. For listeners of the show, Dipsy's offering an extended 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/savage. That's 30 days of full access for free when you go to dipsystories.com/savage. dipsystories.com/savage.
There are a lot of sexy people out there doing a lot of sexy things, but not all of them have questions for me, and so they don't call into the show. So I'm calling them instead, because I want to ask, what are you doing? So Ms. Kim, thank you so much for coming on the Savage Lovecast.
Thank you very much for having me.
For people who don't know who are you?
I am a professional dominatrix.
And specifically, why we have you here on the show today, what are you doing?
I am a findom, and I also teach classes about findom to other sex workers.
And how long have you been doing findom?
15 years.
Wow.
Long time.
So quite a long time, sort of one of the OG findoms. It seemed to me that findom kind of burst fully formed onto the internet around 2008. I've always kind of pegged it to the financial crisis in 2008. And I do think that there's a way human beings have of processing cultural traumas through our erotic imaginations. And maybe it was just a coincidence that I didn't hear about findom until after the 2008 financial crash. But that's when I first heard about it, and I have always thought there might be a relationship. What do you think?
I think it has to do much more with relation to working online. Everything that I've done before kind of the internet really started, at least personally. I've always been kinky and into domination and submission, but with the invention of the internet and people talking about these things, that's over the many years that I've been doing this, is more to do with simply this fetish becoming more popular because of the internet.
The internet basically facilitating it.
Yes. So the internet, it facilitates in many ways. Sex work in general has always existed. However, being public about it and showing off what you're doing has facilitated a fetish like FinDom more so than other fetishes, probably.
I mean, it used to be that if you were going to financially dominate someone, you would have to show up. They would have to show up. They would have to hand you over the money in person, or you'd have to meet them at the ATM. I remember some early FinDom videos that were meeting at the ATM. Now, with the internet, somebody can use a Cash App to do a cash transfer while they interact with a FinDom online. How much of FinDom do you think is online versus in person?
It is 95% of my work is online. So for other people, I can't speak to them, but almost all of my work is online. And thus, yes, you use every available platform to you to collect money.
How does it work? For people who aren't familiar, like what is an interaction, an average FinDom session interaction look like? How does it unfold?
So I can define it for you. And I can tell you how people think it works versus how it actually works. FinDom is financial domination. So technically it means you are dominating someone's finances. It really means more the fetishization of money. And on top of that, there's also the myth that someone is just giving you money for existing, for doing nothing. So there are different layers to FinDom that some things are true, some things are not. Mostly, it's simply a branch, a fetish, and a branch of sex work.
So what's not true about FinDom? What are myths that people carry around in their heads who aren't familiar with it in practice?
What's not true is that pretty girls sit around and they say, hand me some money because I'm a brat, or I'm telling you how to do it and I'm simply telling you to spend money or give me money and then people just do it. That is a myth. It's not how that works. Just like all sex work or domination, I think people have, for example, a femdom, a person who, like me, a professional dominatrix, you know, the myth is mired in whips and chains and thigh-high boots, all of which I have. But then there's the other part, which is much more about the psychology of people, their emotions, and their normal daily lives, the sensuality behind it, listening.
So it's not just FinSubs handing over money. There is an exchange kind of goods and services there, with the service being attention. We live in an attention economy. People are always calling this the attention economy. And what a FinSub is purchasing is the time and attention of the dom. And sometimes that attention looks like, just hand me the money and I don't care and I don't have to do anything. But in a way, the dom saying that to the sub is performing that. It's a performance.
Exactly.
That the sub is purchasing from the dom.
Exactly. This is a luxury service industry. So I talk about these things in my sex worker classes, and I remind those who attend that it's a really funny industry because you're giving the feeling and the idea that you're the one in charge, but there's nothing to be in charge of if someone isn't actually coming to you and paying you. So it's an exchange and you are providing a service.
What's the most you've ever been tributed in one session?
I hate this question. It's $115,000.
Oh my, I am in the wrong. How often do people hear that and say, I am in the wrong line of work?
I don't talk about it that much. Thing is, I don't ever expect to be paid that much. I also don't ever expect that to happen again. This is very, very unusual. I also don't like questions like this, because I find much more joy in my work when it isn't about the different dichotomy of like the most, the best, the freakiest. My joy comes from repeated interactions and developing actual relationships and rapport.
So that one very large amount was kind of a black swan event, an outlier. Yes. And not characteristic of your usual sort of interactions with fin subs.
I would starve if I waited for this one person or any person to come to me and hand me that much money. You cannot expect that. And I didn't. I never had expected any kind of a payment that big.
So the question everybody always asks about FinDom is, how can that be ethical? How, in your classes where you teach other DOMs how to do FinDom and do it right, what's the ethical code? What are the ethics of it?
I mean, you may as well ask about the ethical code behind drinking or eating or gambling or murder. There isn't an ethical code. And the reason I say this is because, not that I am comparing FinDom to eating and drinking and murder. What I'm saying is that it's ethical if you're an ethical person doing it. And it's not ethical if you're an unethical person. And the reason I say that is because I work in a land of fantasy. And sometimes I have that sense of power. However, there's never been a time when I have to question my ethics, because if someone comes to me and asks me to dominate them financially, I do so as a form of service to them. I'm providing a service, a really hot, sensual experience of a service, but nonetheless, it's a service. So if I don't provide that, then maybe ethics come in. And if they don't pay me, then nothing happens. So
where can people find you online?
You can find me online at MzKim.vip.
And you're on socials at
MzKimAP. And that's Twitter and Instagram and all the places.
Ms. Kim, thank you so much for coming on the show and talking about financial domination.
Thank you, Mr. Savage, for having me.
Today's episode is brought to you by our friends at Shameless Care. They champion the same uninhibited joy of sex that we do here at the Lovecast, but with an added layer of protection you're going to love. Shameless Care is offering our listeners a groundbreaking product called DoxyPep. It's a game changer in sexual health, drastically reducing your chances of catching bacterial STIs like gonorrhea, chlamydia, and syphilis by up to 90%. Remember that collective exhale when PrEP turned the tide against HIV? Well, DoxyPep is doing the same for these all-too-common STIs, liberating people from worry and letting pleasure take the front seat. And here's the best part. DoxyPep is offered at just $109 for an entire year's supply sent directly to your home. No sneaky recurring charges, no hidden fees, just straightforward, shameless care for your passionate pursuits. Head over to www.shamelesscare.com/savage. That's www.shamelesscare.com/savage. Check out the research and secure your year of empowered, worry-free intimacy today. Because after all, the best kind of care is shameless care.
Hi, Dan. I'm calling in on behalf of a friend of mine who's in basically a sugar baby, sugar daddy relationship, but not officially. She's 30. He's 70. He's very wealthy. For the last couple of years, he's been flying her around. They've kind of had this companionate sort of relationship where he's kind of taken a lot of priority, even when she's dated other men that have been more or less understanding of this arrangement. But she's now at a point where she feels a little bit like cynical about finding love or a more normal relationship. And part of her feels resigned to maybe just lean into this relationship with this man who's proposing that they basically get married, and that for the next, 8 years, they just have a normal kind of relationship. And then that kind of morphs into more of a caretaking relationship. And then at some point in her 40s, she would have financial security and be able to start a new life. She, I think, loves and enjoys this person's company to an extent, although it comes with some serious costs around the ability to kind of have her own social life. He basically flies her around. They travel a lot, and he wants to just do more of that, basically have her be a companion to him in his retirement, which really kind of prevents her from establishing roots, creating a community, the possibility to maybe have kids, have an enjoyable sex life. I don't think she enjoys the sex at all with this person. And she's wondering how to negotiate that aspect of the relationship. But I'm encouraging her to really treat this relationship like what it is, which is basically a transactional relationship, and with no judgment, but hoping that she can at least admit to herself that that's what's going on, and then to take some power back in that relationship and maybe establish some rules or get some sort of financial benefit out of this relationship, because the whole thing seems to be just based around his needs and really not her long-term well-being or even short-term. It seems to be a rather controlling relationship, one that is not without its own kind of toxic elements, but ultimately I think is something that would be worth exploring. I think she would benefit to, have a little better understanding of how to set up a good sugar baby, sugar daddy relationship and how to negotiate that. So just wondering what advice you have for someone in this situation and how to empower them to make it a situation that works for them and their sugar daddy in the short term and long term.
What if he lives to be 100? Is your friend prepared to take care of this man, be his spouse through the end of his days? What kind of a prenup is he going to ask her to sign? Will she be on the hook if he can wine her and dine her and fly around the country for the next 7 or 8 years before he ages into infirmity and the relationship shifts to less husband sugar daddy, wife sugar baby, and more caretaker patient? And what incentive will your friend have to take good care of this man if what she really wants is for him to be dead already so she can inherit his property and live comfortably and start making her own choices again and start fucking people she would actually like to fuck again? And I can't imagine that he would not perceive that or does not already know that. And so what kind of relationship will this be in 10 years when gears shift and he continues to age and fall apart and has one foot in the grave? What kind of marriage is this going to be? Look, your friend, if this is a sugar baby, sugar daddy relationship, it's already transactional, but there is a pretense at the heart of a lot of sugar baby, sugar daddy relationships where the sugar baby, although they're being compensated, and I hope your friend is being compensated with more than just travel, the sugar baby is being compensated, but what they're providing is kind of a girlfriend experience to the sugar daddy. It is easier to provide that kind of experience in bursts, over a weekend, over a two-week vacation, where then you get to go home and return to your regular life and you're not on anymore. You're not having to perform girlfriend. The problem, if she agrees to marry this man, is that she will, day after day after day, for the foreseeable future, for potentially decades plural to come, have to perform wife, loving wife, attentive wife, wife who wants to fuck this 70-something-year-old man, or pretend she wants to fuck this 70-year-old man and have sex she's clearly not enjoying, and then eventually loving, caring, attentive wife of an aging partner in decline. Can she do that day after day after day? Can she play that role? When you're the sugar baby, yeah, you can play that role. You can pretend to be somebody's girlfriend. You can laugh at his jokes. You can suck his dick. And part of what you're thinking is, TikTok, the weekend's almost over and I get to leave with my couple of $1,000 or my rent paid or whatever it is that the sugar daddy is providing to the sugar baby. I would, if I were your friend, or if I were you, if I were your friend's friend, I would encourage her to really think through what this would mean. And then if she feels like this is something that she could do, she needs to have a really no holds barred come to Jesus conversation with this man about what his expectations would be, and maybe dropping the pretense of girlfriend for a minute and say, look, we have a transactional relationship. You pay me to be there for you, and I enjoy your company and spending time with you, but of course I'm rounding that up to a romantic interest in you that would not exist were it not for the ways in which you compensate me for my time. And so I need to know what my compensation's going to be if we are going to have not a love match of a marriage. This was never a love match, but we're going to agree to a kind of elaborate business relationship shipped under a marriage license that is companionate, that is loving to the extent that I can love you as another human being, but not, it's not a romantic love. You can have no illusions about that. And if he can step outside these roles, step outside the pretense and really negotiate the terms of this contract and what it would mean and what his expectations would be of her, and those expectations are realistic, and she will not be faulted for or emotionally abused for or divorced for not loving him like a spouse should love him, then maybe. But you say there are toxic elements of this relationship now, and once married, if she agrees to marry him, what will his expectations be then? And if the relationship falls short of his expectations, how toxic could it get then? It could get very fucking toxic if he comes to resent her because he thought, with all the time they'd spent together and all the fucking that they'd done and all the pretending that she'd done, that she enjoyed spending that time with him and enjoyed fucking him the way he wanted to be fucked, that she actually had developed feelings for him over time that weren't about the money that he was paying her, or if they married, the money she would stand to inherit. She should risk being very clear that that's what she's in this for. And if he can accept that, be realistic about that, keep his expectations realistic and in check, maybe they could marry. But if he can't, or he won't, yeah, they shouldn't. Whenever I go stay at my boyfriend's, I am delighted for at least two reasons. One of the big reasons, I get to see my boyfriend. The other is that, like me and my husband, me and my boyfriend also have a Helix Sleep mattress. The Helix lineup offers 20 unique mattresses, including the award-winning Lux Collection, a mattress designed for big and tall sleepers, and even mattresses made just for kids. To figure out which mattress is right for you, take the Helix Sleep Quiz to find your perfect mattress in under 2 minutes. And then your personalized mattress will be shipped straight to your door free of charge. But you will get, with your mattress, a 100-night sleep trial. You can try out your new mattress, see how your body adjusts, and if you decide it's not the best fit, you are welcome to return it for a full refund. Helix offers models with memory foam layers to provide optimal pressure relief if you sleep on your side, like me, or models with more responsive foam to cradle your body for essential support in stomach and back sleeping positions, plus enhanced cooling features to keep you from overheating at night. Helix mattresses all come with a 10 or 15 year warranty, depending on the model. Helix has been awarded the number one mattress pick by GQ and Wired magazines. It's even recommended by multiple leading chiropractors and doctors of sleep medicine as a go-to fix for improving your sleep. And right now, for my listeners, Helix is offering 20% off all mattress orders and two free pillows. Go to helixsleep.com/savage to get 20% off and those two free pillows. With Helix, better sleep starts now.
Hey, Dan, I'm a poly guy living in the Northwest. I'm in my 50s and I've been poly for about a decade now. And I'm really trying to get a little more serious about this dating thing and find somebody that I can consider to be a partner, somebody to hang on vacations and somebody to, you know, stay overnight more often and things like that. And somebody who's not already partnered, but, you know, not doesn't already have a nesting partner or married. And because it's really easy to find married women to date, but hard to find somebody who's a partner. And one of my biggest challenges seems to be just fitness, like caring about fitness. And I'm not a, you know, I'm not an Ironman athlete, but I care about fitness more than most men my age, apparently. So obviously I have to retarget. I have to change how I'm doing things. And maybe what I need to do is be open to somebody who's open to monogamy in the short term so that we can transition to a monogamish relationship down the road. I'd be open to that. But I floated this idea online and the response was horrible, of course. Well, I don't know what I expected. So I wanted to get your opinion on this. Like, can people start as, hey, let's be monogamous now, but let's plan on transitioning to non-monogamy later? And is that it sounds so clinical, but, you know, is that a viable dating strategy? Also, should I bring this up before a first date? And what's a good way to phrase this on a dating profile?
On the one hand, it's not okay generally, to allow someone to make a reasonable assumption about you that isn't accurate. For instance, if you're married, it is not okay for you to get on dating apps and present yourself as available for dating and romance and allow people to assume that you are not just available for dating and romance, but you are available. You are not already married, already taken. People will assume that the people on dating apps who are seeking, who mark themselves as single, are indeed unmarried and single and available for open-ended relationships that can tiptoe toward that relationship escalator and perhaps end at marriage. And omitting that fact, whether you're meeting on dating apps or meeting in person, is to allow people to make an inaccurate but reasonable assumption about you. And you shouldn't do that. You shouldn't let people make reasonable assumptions about you that you know not to be true, because disabusing them of that reasonable assumption might lessen your chance of getting in their pants. That's just not okay. On the other hand, the conversation about are we going to be monogamous or not, defining the relationship, that conversation is usually not done online in advance. It's usually not done on the first date. People date and they hang out and they get to know each other. And eventually they get to that place where they want to have that, let's talk about long-term prospects. Let's define this relationship. Let's put on the table what our interests are, our expectations are, our relationship goals are. And it is reasonable to have that conversation 3 months in, 6 months in. Some people have that conversation a year in. And at that time, you want to get out, see, you know, see if you're compatible, see if you want the same things. You want to have kids or you don't want to have kids. You want to live in a certain part of the country, you don't want to live in a certain part of the country. That is often when people have a conversation about their expectations around monogamy. So on the one hand, by putting it yourself out there without mentioning that you're poly and would prefer an open or monogamous relationship, at least down the road, you're allowing the women who might respond to your ad to make an inaccurate but reasonable assumption. Reasonable assumption of most of the men on these dating apps, but inaccurate in your case. On the other hand, waiting 3 months to have that conversation about long-term and what you want out of the relationship long-term is a perfectly reasonable dating and mating strategy. And it may be the case that you date somebody for 3 months who would have rejected you out of hand if you had disclosed wanting poly out of the gate, but 3 months in, they'll weigh the person that they've come to know or have feelings for against maybe the assumptions that they've made in the past about people who don't want monogamy, or the prejudices they hold in their hearts about people who are not monogamous. And maybe it'll open their mind to what could be possible in a relationship with you. You may get, however, some angry reactions from women who feel like you led them on, that you knew this and waited to tell them until 3 to 6 months. And they may be furious. They kind of have a right to be furious because you allowed them to make a reasonable assumption about you that wasn't accurate. So you're going to have to pick your poison, living your life, your romantic life, your dating life on the hard mode of disclosing this in advance or on the apps, or taking the risk of waiting 3 to 6 months to disclose it during that first, where are we going? What are we doing? What is it that we want? Define the relationship conversation. Whatever you choose, good luck. All right, listener feedback. Before we get to this week's listener response calls, I want to share a couple of listener comments about last week's show posted at savage.love. Says superstar commenter Andrew, I was frustrated by the catching feelings call on last week's show. I keep saying it. Open relationship is not the same as poly. In some ways, they are opposites. Andrew goes on, if you tell new encounters your relationship is poly, they will assume there's some way to join the polycule. If you're just open, make it clear that no one else is joining the polycule because there is no polycule. And again, I want to second Andrew here. The best way to do that is by not using poly to mean open or open to mean poly. All poly relationships are open, but not all open relationships are poly. I realize it's old-fashioned of me and of Andrew to want words to mean things,
But set or semi-set or slowly evolving meanings allow words to do what words are supposed to do, help us communicate effectively. A listener has a book recommendation for the caller who is annoyed with the bodicey, rippery selections her book club had been making lately. Says Starlight Squirrel, I personally adore smutty fantasy with brooding bad boys. They suck in real life, but they sure can be fun in your imagination. But if that's not your style, check out Winter's Fury by A.E. Rain. Really strong, cool female protagonist who calls all the shots and is never struck dumb by anyone. Says Heidi Lynn about last week's opening rant, I appreciate when your intros highlight important things we need to be aware of, Dan, and I don't think you need to apologize for them. Even though we may come here to get away from the serious stuff, it's good that you do intros like this week's intro. Please keep them coming as needed. Thank you very much, Heidi. I will keep those intros coming as needed, and I kind of feel like we're going to need a few more of them between now and November. All right, for more listener feedback, more listener comments, and more of my responses, check out Struggle Session, a weekly bonus column for Magnum Subs, goes up almost every Thursday at savage.love. It is also where you will find the Muppet-faced Man of the Week. And now, listener response calls.
Hi, Dan. This is a response call for the woman in episode 912 who called in about her book club. I actually really agree with what you pointed out about how we view women's sexuality, and I wonder if she would be this self-conscious about it if her husband had not made the Thirsty Moms Club comment. To me, that was so patronizing, and I feel like, again, it is even less about the content of what the fantasy is. It's more like this group of moms, and moms especially, are not allowed to be sexual, getting together to read these books that are fantasy and are an escape. And what fantasy isn't filled with a little bit of silliness and ridiculousness and unrealistic? That's why it's a fantasy. So I sort of feel like the husband should be given a bit more shit for just how he talked about this.
Hi, Dan. Just a quick comment for the mother whose teenage son was using sex toys. The only thing I would say is, yeah, let him do him. It sounds like he's doing great. Maybe drop some information somewhere or a resource for him about cleaning sex toys and best practices to make sure that he is also using the right kind of lubrication if he's using them so that he's not somehow destroying whatever they're made out of. So maybe there's just like a resource you can find about how best to use your sex toys, and you could just sort of like hide it somewhere in his room where he can find it. You want to make sure that he's at least being sanitary with it and not going to hurt himself or anyone else with them.
Hey, Dan. Responding to the girl who sort of got pushed by the wayside by her bestie for a controlling new suitor. I think Dan gave really good advice. This thing is going to burn out. You can't get away with being that controlling in a relationship. And he's going to see it, and he's going to need his best friend during and after. And I would encourage you to, rather than telegraphing exactly how you feel about it, like, rise to the occasion and be the classy best friend that you would expect him to be. I was in a relationship with a very controlling woman, and my bestie, who was my age and female and conventionally attractive, she could not abide us hanging out. And her behavior really affected me even when I was hanging out with my friend and wasn't around her. I was very nervous. I was checking my phone a lot, kind of miserable. And she really let me know at the moment, you know, that this was kind of extreme behavior, and then did her best not to telegraph just how much it fucking annoyed her. So we're still besties now. That girl has come and gone. And I would just encourage you to be the best friend that he needs, even if he's not doing it to you now. Those friendships will last a lifetime, but he's going to need time to make a mistake, and he's going to need a safe place to come back.
And we're going to leave it there. We've got three great ways for you to get us your questions or your comments for future shows. You can record your question or your comment, savage.love/askdan, or you can make a voice memo on your very own phone and email us your question or comment at q@savage.love, or you can call us on our landline and leave us a message at 206-302-2064. All the amazing sex, smut, laughs, and humanity that is Hump 2024 Part 1, the world's best short erotic/pornographic film festival, is coming to Montreal, New Orleans, Washington, D.C., Burlington, Vermont, and Bend, Oregon, this weekend. To get tickets to one of these shows or to find out when Hump is coming to a city near you, go to humpfilmfest.com. And while you're on the website, be sure to click on submit to find out how you can get your dirty little masterpiece into our dirty little film festival in 2025. Magnum subs, don't forget to join us for Salvage Love Live, noon Pacific, this Thursday. If you're not already a Magnum sub and you want to try it out and join us for Salvage Love Live this week, you can get a one-month Magnum subscription for just $8 at savage.love. Follow me on Instagram and Threads at Dan Savage. Follow me at Blue Sky at Dan Savage. And you can still find me at The Bad Place at Fake Dan Savage. Follow Ms. Kim on Twitter at Ms. Kim AP. Check out her website, mzkim.com. Follow Neil McNeil on Instagram and Threads at Neil McNeil, both Neil spelled N-E-I-L. And you can read his essay about being part of a thruple, Notes on a Third, at Medium. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian. Me and Nancy and the tech-savvy at-risk youth. We will all be back at you next week with another installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thank you for downloading.